Pharaoh Narjaqiafan appointed his trusted general Asmor as king of Babylon, a satrap to his own throne. He left him 500 chariots, 2,000 archers and infantry to hold and secure his conquests. Then, with the bulk of his army, he began the march on Egypt to recover his crown and throne from the man who had seized it. Like a snowball rolling down a mountainside, the army of Pharaoh Narjaqiafan gathered weight and impetus as it advanced westward over plain and mountain pass towards the frontier of Egypt. As he went, the vassal kings flocked to his standard, and by the time he stood on the heights of the Katmia Pass, his army had almost trebled in size. Narja looked westward across the wide and sand desert towards the city of Ismailia at the head of the Great Bitter Lake, and to the borders of his homeland. He had known all along that at this point on the march he would be hampered by the size of his host, embarrassed by multitudes. Ahead of him lay a great expanse of desert, with neither a single spring nor an oasis to sustain his army until he reached Ismailia. Once again he was reduced to laying down water points along the route ahead. When he strained his eyes against the glare, he could make out the lines of water carts loaded with clay pots, strung out along the rutted road below the escarpment, like dark worms wriggling through the dun and ochre landscape. For months they had been at work building up water dumps in the desert, burying the filled pots in the sand, then leaving detachments of infantry to guard them while they returned for the next load. It would take his army almost 10 days and nights to make the crossing. During that time they would be strictly rationed, allowed just enough water to sustain the long night marches, and to eke out the burning days when they lay up to rest, enduring the heat in any scrap of shade afforded by linen tents or shelters made from thorn branches and grass. "I will ride with you in the vanguard," Heseret spoke at his elbow, breaking into his train of thought. He glanced at her. "We have discussed this before." He frowned. After years of marriage, her charms and beauty had begun to pall, overshadowed by her petulance, jealousy, and demanding tempers. These days, Narja spent more and more time among his concubines, enduring her jealous tirades when he returned to her bed. "You will come up with the other women in the baggage train, under the wing of Pren the Centurion of the rearguard." Heseret pouted. Once that had been appealing, but now it was merely irritating. "So you can put Lassa with child, just as you have her sister," she complained. She was referring to the two princesses given to Narja as hostages by the satrap of Sumeria as evidence of his loyalty to the crown of Egypt. The princesses were both young, slim, and nubile, with large breasts. They painted their nipples, and in the shameless Sumerian fashion, walked abroad with them, naked and uncovered. "You become tiresome, wife." Narja lifted his upper lip in a smile that was more a snarl. "You know that it is political expediency. I needed a son from at least one of the wenches to place upon the throne when the old man dies."
"Swear on the breath and heart of Siweth that you're not taking Lassa with you in the vanguard,"
Heseret insisted. "I swear it readily." Narja smiled that deadly smile again. "I'm taking Sinal of Huria." She was another hostage, younger even than the Sumerians, barely 14 years of age, but with bright copper-coloured hair and green eyes. Her buttocks were large and rounded. Heseret knew from experience that Narja would enter through the back gate of the citadel as readily as through the front. "I need a son from her as well," Narja explained reasonably, "to place on the throne of Assyria." He laughed then, a soft, mocking snigger. "The duties of royalty are onerous indeed." She gave him a furious glare, and called for her litter with its screens and cushions of silk to take her back down the column to where Prem was bringing up the rearguard.